The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
What happens when a curious kid decides to pick a fight with a UFO? And then we travel to Canada to take a look at the story of a sewer-dwelling monster man that eats cats. And if you think that's scary, just wait till I tell you what else waits for all of us in the darkness below our feet. Today on Dead Rabbit Radio. Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Dead Rabbit Radio. I'm your host, Jason Carpenter. I'm having a great day. I hope you guys are having a great day too. I hope you guys are having tons of fun doing whatever you're doing. We got a ton of stuff to cover today. So first off, running into Dead Rabbit Radio Command. Everyone get on your feet and give it up for Artorias. Woohoo! Yeah! Wee! Yeah! Yeah! He's all running on in. He's running around circles around us. Wee! Artorias, aka Bobby, is going to be our captain, our pilot this episode. Artorias does not support the Patreon. Too young to actually even have a bank account. But Artorias is the child of two of our Patreon supporters, Art and Maria. And Artorias is listening live. Bobby is listening live right now to the Patreon live episode that we record Sundays at 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. So, Bobby, you're going to be our captain, our pilot this episode. If you guys don't happen to be the child of Patreon supporters or support the Patreon yourself, that's fine too. It really is. Just help spread the word about Dead Rabbit Radio. That helps out so much. Tell your friends, tell your family, tell everyone you know. Dead Rabbit Radio is your favorite paranormal show. Bobby, let's go ahead and get this party started. I'm going to toss you the keys to the Jason Jalopy. Catch him in your tiny hands. I actually don't know. I don't know how old he is. We'll assume somewhere between the ages of 10 and 0. A fetus, possibly. Bobby, I'm going to toss you to catch him in your little tiny hands. The keys to the Jason Jalopy. We're leaving behind Dead Rabbit Radio Command. Drive us all the way out to Spain. Probably should have taken a boat. Probably should have taken the bunny battleship. But no, we drove all the way underneath the water to Spain. Specifically, we're headed to Tordesillas. The town of Tordesillas. That's in Valladolid, Spain. October 1st, 1977, we're in Tordesillas, Spain. We're about to meet this young boy. His name is Martin Rodriguez. He's 7 years old. And, you know, it's evening. You know, it's getting late out. And these kids, him and his buddy Fernando Carabellos, and some of their other local friends say, hey, let's play a game of hide and go seek. What's the most dangerous game we can play at night? Hide and go seek. This group of kids, we're going to scatter and conceal ourselves in the darkness. Some kids like, I'm going to lay down flat on the road. The perfect hiding spot. Another guy's like, ooh, look at this abandoned fridge. Once I climb inside, no one will find me. Yeah, they won't find you for a couple days, bro. Not a good idea, but anyways, they're playing hide-and-go-seek at night. And Martin actually has the best hiding spot in mind. There's this old corral. Like 2 or 3 miles away. He's like, oh, they'll never catch me. He's all out of breath by the time he gets there. It's an old rundown corral off of N-122. I don't know where, that's the actual road. So if you're in Spain listening to this, you might be able to reenact this story. You might want to wait till I'm done with it. You might not like the ending. Be careful before you go out there. N-122, which is like a roadway, there's this old corral. And Martin and Fernando are headed out there. It's like, dude, this would be the perfect hiding spot. Sure, sure, it's right next to a freeway, and it's probably filled with black widows, but at least no one will find us. No one will find our bodies. Martin and Fernando are walking down to this corral, and the way it was laid out was that there is a wall alongside the road, and then on the other side of this wall is this corral. So they're walking down the road, and they're walking on one side of the wall, and they got to walk around it, or they're going to hop it at some point to get to the corral. Here's the thing, though. Martin and Fernando, this is the area they live in. They know that it's very common for hobos and thieves to hide on the other side of the wall. Okay, just a tip, if you're playing hide-and-go-seek, don't hide with the hobos. Don't, you're never going to be found again. Technically, you'll win. Sometimes you might rather have lost hide-and-go-seek. Martin's like, do you remember all those hobos hang out? Remember where those thieves, those brigands jump out in the middle of the night and stop travelers? Yeah, let's go there. Let's go hide there. And apparently they knew this area well enough that there was this ritual that people would do as they were walking down this roadway. They would pick up rocks and throw them over the wall. So if it was like a hobo, if it was some homeless guy sleeping on a piece of cardboard, and a big rock flies over the wall and hits him, ow! He's going to leave. He's going to move. Now, I'll say this, if there's a guy on the other side of the wall with a knife, and he's planning his entire night around robbing you, and then you hit him with a rock, I don't think he's going to be like, oh no, I got a bruise on my thigh, time to go home. No, you're probably going to make him mad. But they did this. They threw the rocks over the wall to scare away anyone who happened to be on the other side of that wall. And just a tip, just don't walk by the wall that may or may not have people on the other side of it. So he picks up this rock and he throws it, like he has many times, over this wall, and he hears a dong. And he looks back at Fernando and he's like, dude, did you just hear that? Fernando's like, yeah, what was that? Because instinctively, they knew what the sound was. It was the sound of something hitting something metal. But there shouldn't have been anything metal over there. Not at least big enough to make that noise. Like they heard the loud metal dong sound. So Martin ends up walking and he walks around the wall. And that's when he sees a UFO. Not high up in the sky, not just this twinkling light where you can go, huh, I wonder what that is. No, it's landed. It's on the other side of the wall. He said it was 9 feet high, 6 feet wide, and it was in an inverted pear shape. So the big base at the top and then it tapered down to a little neck. He should have just said it looked like a light bulb, but maybe he really likes pears. Maybe he just really, he's like, everything's pear-shaped. He's like, wow, look at this boat. It's pear-shaped. I'm like, wow. He said it looked like an inverted pear, and it's resting on these three thick legs, like these landing gear have come out of it. It has these circular windows on this craft, and he starts to see blue and pink lights. Baloopas come out there doing a little song. He didn't say that it made any noise, but it's visual. I'm trying to make it. Blue and pink lights. Buddy, doop, they're flashing. At that point, the pair, and he realized that it was a vehicle. He also said there was clearly a doorway on it, but the door was closed. He said the inverted pair starts to lift off and gets, a couple feet in the air. And Martin's like, this is amazing. Seeing a UFO close up is so awesome. And as the pair continues to rise into the sky, all of a sudden, a beam shoots out of the pair, of the inverted pair UFO, and strikes Martin. And he's completely frozen in place. The pair is still kind of hovering there, and it's slowly rising. Martin can't move. This beam froze every muscle in his body. Fernando was there. He sees all of this happening. He sees this big pear-shaped, inverted pear-shaped UFO. I don't know why I'm so hung up on that. I don't keep going. It's a flying disc. It's a flying disc when I talk about other UFOs. Maybe I'm hungry. But anyways, the inverted pear UFO is still slowly rising. Martin's frozen. Fernando's freaking out. And he tries to grab his friend and he's trying to like pull him to safety. But Martin is just like frozen there. And apparently too, when the beam hit him, he clutched his stomach. Like it made his stomach hurt. And that's how he's frozen. He's frozen clutching his stomach. And Fernando's like, come on, Martin, let's go. Let's get out of here. And he cannot move his friend. So Fernando just runs. He just was like, see you, dude. I don't want to get shot. Let me go get help. He runs to go get help. And as Fernando is running off into the darkness, help, help, Martin's frozen. We weren't even playing freeze tag, help. All of a sudden, Martin starts to lose consciousness and falls backwards. The pair continues to soar off into the sky until it is no longer visible. Fernando shows up with the other people. He had to find everyone first. He's like, guys, this isn't a game. They're like, find us. And then we will help our friend. And he's like, oh, are you in the bushes? After he finally rounds up all of his friends, let's go. Martin needs help. So Fernando and all these other neighborhood boys walk over there. And Martin is laying on the ground. He can move now. But he's completely out of it. He's semi-conscious. He's like, Well, he wasn't even doing that because he was mute. So he was just going, like he was moving his mouth and nothing was coming out. And he was yellow. His skin was all yellowed and his pupils were dilated. Which out of those three, that last one's not too bad, right? You can get dilated pupils doing a lot of things. If you're yellow, you probably have to go to the hospital. And that's what they did. I'm assuming the parents got involved at some point. You might have thought Fernando was joking around, but when you see your friend laying on the ground and he's yellow, you're like, this prank's a little intricate. Eventually, Martin is taken to a hospital in Valladolid, Spain. It's a big city nearby. And when he gets there, the doctors are like, what happened to this guy? And Fernando's like, listen, man, you're not going to believe it. I don't even know how you would explain this. I would make something up. I'd be like, we were walking and then a hobo bit him. And they're like, hobo bit him. They isolate him. Make sure he doesn't have any hobo-based diseases. You couldn't say my friend got shot by a UFO. You'd have to just be like, we were walking down the street and then all of a sudden he clutched his stomach and fell over and turned yellow. Okay, well, that makes more sense than a UFO. When he gets to the hospital, he starts to go blind and then begins vomiting. Blah! Blah! Throwing up everywhere. But on the plus side, he couldn't see it, right? I mean, what's the worst thing about throwing up? One, it's the physicalness. I hate throwing up and you feel it like move through your body and then it comes out your mouth and it burns because of all that stomach acid. And then the second worst thing, I would say, is watching it come out of your body and splatter across the ground. You're eating a bowl of clam chowder. You're like, yummy, yummy, yummy. Another episode of Dead Rap Radio. Do not eat while listening to this podcast. Who was that guy? I don't remember his name. But there's a guy who has a hot dog cart who plays this podcast on his radio that's next to his hot dog cart. And I was like, man, you really live dangerously. Is seeing the vomit come out. So if I was blind, I would be vomiting everywhere. I'm blah, blah, blah. I'm trying to like be like Daredevil, trying to sense where things are around me by hearing how long it takes for my vomit to hit a wall. It's like, oh, that wall is 3 feet away. He's blind or going blind. He's vomiting, and then he goes into a coma. And according to reports, they had to do 14 surgeries on Martin to save his life. Most of those were relieving pressure off of his brain. They had to cut away a little bit of his skull and let the brain breathe a bit. He's alive. Well, he was alive after that. I don't know if he's still alive today. You know, because the story is what, like almost 40 years old at this point? More than that, because I'm 47. I was born in 76. Story's almost 50 years old. I don't know. I mean, that's 57. He might still be alive. But I found this story on thinkaboutitdocs.com. They got it from a book called Return to Magonia, Investigating UFOs in History by Chris Aubeck. It's an interesting story. I chose to do it for two reasons. One, because I know a kid's listening to this episode. Hey, Bobby. Listening to this episode live And it involved a kid. It did involve a kid undergoing multiple surgeries, but, you know, it's a kid's a kid. Also, because we don't get a lot of stories about children interacting with UFOs. There's a very famous one in Africa, the Aerial School, where basically an entire grade, if not the whole school, had a close encounter. This UFO landed nearby. Very, very famous case. We covered that on the podcast years ago. I'll put that episode in the show notes. But that's a case that they've actually re-interviewed the adults decades later. And they're like, yeah, it was 100% a UFO. Like, nobody has wiggled from that story after all this time. One of my favorite stories, I'll put this episode in the show notes as well, is the Battle of Casablanca. And that is where a group of kids had to fight off a alien invasion. It's such a bizarre story. I'm surprised it's not more popular because it's such a dynamic narrative. The reason why I think it's not popular is because it's too weird. But I'll put that episode in the show notes as well. We don't see a lot of kids interacting with UFOs. Well, it's funny now that I say that, a bunch of memories are popping back in my head. We did have that crazy story about that little girl who would get abducted at night. And one day a friend of the family was over and the little girl got abducted and the friend of the family was like freaking out. And the grandpa's like, don't do anything. Don't say anything. They'll bring her back. They always bring her back. Put that episode in the show notes. Aliens are constantly abducting children. It's probably who they abduct the most. Now that I think about it. I just thought it was a crazy story as well. The kid just thinks he's going to throw a rock and hit a homeless man in the head. Instead, he bangs it against a metal inverted pair UFO and gets paralyzed, goes blind. His vision comes back. As far as I can tell, he does return to full health, but he did require multiple brain surgeries to do it. The power level between humans and UFOs, there's just nothing to compare it against. I guess it would be you could say the difference between a canoe and a battleship. And you might be getting close there. We don't have anything on Earth, as far as I know, that if you shot somebody with it, they'd turn yellow, go blind, vomit, and their brain would swell. But I'm sure somebody's working on it, right? I'm sure somebody in some laboratory is like, that would be a good idea. Maybe we should invent that. They're trying to retrofit, or what do they call it, reverse engineer these UFOs for the propulsion system. And right now, a scientist is listening to this episode, and then he runs into the workshop. He's like, guys, I know we're trying to figure out how to transwarp across the galaxy, but maybe, just maybe, we can try to get one of these laser weapons to work. I just heard about a kid who got paralyzed and went blind. It gave me a great idea. So then they start trying to build this thing. Crazy story, though. A kid versus a UFO. It happens all the time. Now that I think about it, it's not rare at all. But this might be the first time we've had someone accidentally piss off an alien. And in return, he had severe brain damage. But again, I think he's fine now. So I guess the moral of the story is don't be this kid. Don't be this kid or any kid. You might get abducted by aliens. Bobby, I'm going to go ahead and toss you the keys of the world-famous Carpenter Copter. Let's say goodbye to Spain. Fly us all the way out to Canada. What do kids love more than other kids? Playing with their friends? I don't know. Do kids like other kids? I don't know. It's been so long since I've been one. Pets. Cats and dogs. Who doesn't love a little furry friend to crawl on your lap? I always wonder, why are animals, not all, why are animals so cute? Like, did a squirrel evolve to be adorable? Because if it was gross looking, right? Imagine it had no fur and it had big bulging eyes. We'd probably kill him. We'd probably be like, I don't want that guy in my tree. It's a tree rat. That's what we call them. They'd be super disgusting. So one day, like, the tree rat was born, and he's like, he's thinking, he's concentrating, he's all by the power of evolution. I will be cute. A little fur starts growing out of him. Like, why are cats and dogs and squirrels and some monkeys cute? But then other animals are repulsive. I always wonder, why aren't all animals poisonous? Like, if it was up to me, that's not how evolution works. It's just not one person's born and they're like, you know what? I'm going to be cute and poisonous. But think about it. Evolution says this snake is going to have a bunch of poison in his fangs. The snake's like, ding! And he has all of a sudden, he's like, wow, this is amazing. Thanks, evolution. And then evolution goes, and I want the elephant to be really, really big so lions can't eat him. And the elephant's like, thanks. Thanks, evolution. Now I got another question. Then why didn't evolution say to the lions, you're like, it's changed. People are pulling their hair out. You're like, this better be a bit. This better be a bit. Jason doesn't actually have questions like this. I do. If evolution made lions big and hard to take down, right? They have that tough skin. They got that really good memory. Some of them can fly. Some of them have big ears. They can fly around. Why didn't evolution also make the lion, like, maybe go, evolution goes, well, we don't want to make you too big. We want to keep you small, but we'll give you poisonous teeth that can kill an elephant. And the lion's like, oh, that'd be totally dope. And then, so now you have poison lions running around. And then evolution goes to the elephant and says, okay, so I hate to break the bad news to you. We did make you really big and lion-proof. They'll only be able to kill the smallest and the oldest of you. But we now gave him poison fangs. So he might just run up and bite your big toe. And he'll die a day later. So because of that, now I'm going to make elephant meat poisonous. If anyone eats an elephant, they die. Because there's some animals out there like that. That, you know, they're like, they're poisonous. You can't eat them. Are there animals like that? I know there's plants like that. I'm sure there's a couple. Well, there's the pufferfish, right? So now the elephant's poisonous to eat. And the elephant's like, oh, this is perfect. I have no natural predators. I now have poison running through my veins. If somebody eats me, they die. So people will stop eating me. Thanks, evolution. Wouldn't evolution then go back to the lion and say, this whole process is taking place over the course of, you know, like 10, 15 million years. Evolution goes back to the lion and said, hey, dude, so you're really cool. I really like you, but I had to help the elephant out and made him poisonous. So you can't eat the elephant now. And the lion's like, oh, man, he's eating him right now. He's all num num. And the evolution's like, sorry. I hit traffic on my way over here. I should have been here 5 minutes earlier. But now I'm going to evolve the lion so it actually can't die from elephant poison. It's too late for you, but all future lions can eat poison elephant meat. Like, isn't that how that would work? Evolution would keep going back and forth. Not necessarily back and forth, but if all of a sudden all humans evolve to be poisonous, then mosquitoes who like to eat us, who like to drink our blood... You're like, Jason, get to whatever story you're going to tell. It's probably going to involve a lot of dead cats. And somehow, it's less traumatic than this bit. It's not a bit. Wouldn't mosquitoes eventually evolve to be able to drink poisonous human blood? I don't understand how any of this stuff works. I know it takes millions of years. I know that one day, like, a freak is born. An elephant is born, and it's poisonous. It's a poison elephant. You're like, nope, Jason, that's not how it works. You're all punching your computer. Elephant, a freak, it's a mutant. It's the Magneto of elephants. This baby elephant's born and it's poisonous. And if that baby elephant lives long enough to pass on its genes, then it ends up like marrying a non-poisonous elephant and they have kids who are just kind of poisonous. They just give you a bad tummy ache. If it lives long enough to spread its genes, then the likelihood of the next generation, that one's going to still be poisonous. Some of its kids will be and some of its kids won't be. And then the non-poisonous ones are more likely to die because they're not poisonous. And the poisonous ones live longer to spread their genes. And you multiply that by like 5-10 million years, all of a sudden elephants are poisonous. You can't eat an elephant. But while that was happening, every other species in that ecosystem would either be evolving to eat poisonous elephants or dying off, and we would have never known they existed. So that's what I don't understand. Why isn't everything poison? That would be the perfect state, because then people, like, I would walk up to a dog and I'd be like, "You want to bite me? You want to bite me?" He doesn't, because he knows I'm poisonous. But the dog, the dog's also poisonous, so I won't bite him. None of that has anything to do with this story. I just thought of cats, and then I wondered why they're so cute. I think about that from time to time. Anyways, none of that has anything to do with this. The only thing that's connected, they both involve cats. We are in Toronto, Canada. The year is 1978. And first off, I got to give a shout out to Sustained Disgust. Sustained Disgust made this amazing iceberg with topics that I've never heard of. The old icebergs, we've all been through them. We know them like the back of our hand. This new iceberg is amazing because Sustained Disgust actually included the links to each story. I put it in the show notes. It's an amazing iceberg, and it's stuff you've never heard of before. I've barely scratched the surface of it. Thank you, Sustained Disgust. I never heard of this story. August 1978, we're in Toronto, Canada. In Toronto, Canada, there's a neighborhood called Cabbage Town. Cabbage Town is just like a neighborhood. You don't go there expecting to find a bunch of cabbages. I know places have nicknames, Jason. I don't go to Silicon Valley assuming I'm going to find a bunch of microchips. Cabbage Town, home to the world's most famous clone, Avril Lavigne. This is where she was born. Cabbage Town. We're about to meet a man. He only gave his first name because he said, when he's interviewed by the newspaper when this happened, he goes, "I don't want a bunch of weirdos calling me up." It's probably pretty apt. That's not a word. It's probably pretty, what's the word, prescient? Like he could see into the future. Because obviously, I'm talking about this close to 50 years later. It's still fascinating. Back then, I'm sure he would have gotten a lot of phone calls, a lot of cranks and kooks, as he would put it. Ernest, he's 51 years old. He lives on Parliament Street in Cabbage Town. And he has this litter of kittens that he's been taking care of. He's like, "Oh, come here, Bumblebee." He's picking it up and he's petting it. "Oh, you miss your mother, don't you? Oh, Daffodil. Oh, I'm gonna scratch your belly." And he's playing with this litter of kittens. And then he looks and he's missing a kitten. He's like, "What? Where'd Augustus go? Augustus!" I don't know if baby kittens can hear you. Like, how are their ears developed? "Augustus!" He's walking through the house. "Augustus? Gus, where are you, buddy? Where are you, little kitten?" And in pretty short order, he realizes that Augustus must have gotten out of the house. He's kind of checked everywhere. And he has a fear of where it could have been, because the way that this neighborhood is set up, there are his apartment complex, and then next to it, there's another building. And between the two, there is an alleyway, obviously, but there's also a tunnel entrance. Now, not like a sewer tunnel, although that may be where it ends up. This is actually like a tunnel. People in the area believed it was just caused through erosion through the area. And apparently the way to get down, there was actually a really good write-up about this from there's a newspaper that covered the story basically like a year or two after it came out. The Toronto Sun, it's a mainstream publication. It was written by Laurie Goldstein. She went out and interviewed him. And between the two alleyways, there is this tunnel. And the way it is described, you get to it, it says you have to, quote, clamber 15 feet down the wrong side of a fire escape, which had once served as an exit to the street, but today simply leads to a narrow chamber with walls on four sides. So I had a hard time kind of picturing that, but basically it's not a place that you could easily get to, but with a little bit of effort you could. And you would come down to this place that had the walls on four sides, and then there's an opening that leads into just darkness. And so when Ernest realized that Gus was missing, he goes, "That's probably in that stupid tunnel." Because he's looking around outside, he goes, "Well, you know, go clamber down this fire escape." He gets down there. And there's this opening there that's big enough for a man to crawl through, definitely big enough for a cat to crawl through. And he pulls out his flashlight and he's kind of walking around in this tunnel, probably crouching a bit, walking around in the darkness. "Gus, Gus, are you down here? Come on, you little kitten." And that's when he sees it. Not it as in Gus, as in his kitten. He's shining the flashlight around and he sees what he describes as a monkey. A monkey standing in the darkness at the end of this cave. At this point, he's about 10 feet into this thing. He looks off and he sees this monkey. It's interesting because there was an illustration that was drawn based on his description. It looked more like a man than a monkey. And I think it's easy to say I walked into the sewer and I saw a monkey down there. That's not crazy. Okay, you go, "Oh, then something must have gotten out of the zoo, or some private collector had a monkey that broke loose, or yada, yada, yada." But I don't think he saw a monkey. I think that he saw something more man than monkey, but he didn't want to admit that. There's that very famous Bigfoot 911 call where the guy won't say the word Bigfoot. He just says, "There's something outside my house. It's 8 feet tall. It's hairy." But he can't bring himself to say Bigfoot because that's just a bridge too far. He shines his light and he sees something that looks like a monkey. It's probably about 3 feet tall. He estimated around 30 pounds. The little guy. He said in the darkness when he's shining this flashlight on it, it had slate gray fur, orange red eyes, and long, large teeth. It catches him off guard, right? He's looking for a cat. He doesn't expect to see a monster. He shines that flashlight on it, and he sees that thing, and it looks at him. They're making eye contact. He's looking right into those orange red eyes. And all of a sudden, in the darkness of this tunnel, Ernest hears the creature say, "Go away. Go away." And then the monster took off running down a connecting tunnel. Ernest was like, "Dude, I don't know where that cat's at. If it's down that tunnel, it's not alive." He scrambled back out of the opening as quickly as he could. And when he got back home, his wife, Barbara, who we don't have her last name either because they wanted to, you know, not get a bunch of attention. Barbara realized something was really up. She goes, "Listen, my husband is not a drunk. He's not an alcoholic. He wasn't hallucinating anything." She goes, "When he came up from that tunnel, I could clearly tell something was wrong. He looked rattled. He looked terrified." So he had seen something. Whatever it was, I don't know, but he saw something. And for quite a while, Ernest was only telling his closest confidants about this story. Because again, he didn't want the unwelcome attention. It was a totally different game back in the 70s, 80s. You were 100% labeled a kook if you talked about this stuff. The same way we talk about flat earthers now is how you would talk about alien stories cryptid stories back then. Just complete derision. There must have been something I ordered from Amazon, but I don't remember what it was. It might be my soup. Anyways, he told a couple of his friends, but he never contacted the newspaper. He never wanted anything from this story. What happened was one of his friends would start to tell him the story. One of his friends started telling the story, and it got to the ears of a reporter, and then the reporter traced the story back to Ernest. And the article was published like over a year after the event. And Barbara was at that point saying, listen, he saw something. He was so terrified of what it was. He must have seen something. What's interesting is, to this day, people say that they don't know where the tunnel entrance is. That particular tunnel entrance, I should say. There is a photo of the tunnel entrance, though. By the time that the article was published, so over a year since the initial sighting, a large concrete slab had seemingly collapsed. So now a person could not get into that entrance. And there's a photo of the entrance, and they said between those two times, a slab is blocked it so no adult, a kid, if Bobby wants to go to Canada, he could scramble on through there. Now, Ernest says, I think that this creature must live in the sewer system. I think that this cave must connect to the sewer system in general of Toronto. And this article, it was a well-written article. The article then went and interviewed maintenance workers, people who work in the sewer system. And you had some people, some of the workers say, you know, whether or not there's a monster down there, that's nothing I can speak on. But I don't think that it would connect to the main sewer lines. While other people said, it's totally plausible. They go, I think that this area has probably just been so eroded. This tunnel, and then if you have a wall of part of the sewer system eroded, you could have something running through. However, you did have people in the industry say, I've never seen anything like that down there. What's interesting, too, is that there is a author, he went by the name Commander X, who is a big proponent of the idea of underground alien bases. We've covered this before on the show. It's a pretty well-traveled conspiracy theory that there are underground bases that are both man-made for human reasons and then alien underground bases. Commander X says, he jumped all over this story, he claims to be an ex-military intelligence operative. He says that if you look at the, and I wasn't able to back any of this stuff up, but he goes, if you look at the legends of the local Iroquois tribes in the area, they often spoke of underground entities, alien life forms that are living underground in this area, in Toronto and the surrounding area. He also believes that, Commander X also believes that Lake Ontario is home to an underwater alien base. And he goes, it's quite possible that the tunnels from the underwater alien base are connected. It would make sense, if any of this stuff was true, that the underwater alien base would connect to the underground base in Toronto. And he goes that you can actually go to Girard Street and Church Street, and there's some electromagnetic disturbances, as he said. So there must be some sort of machinery or some sort of device deep underground underneath that intersection. And this is also near Parliament Street. This is also near where this sighting was. He says because of this electromagnetic energy, it causes Girard and Church Street to have the highest incident of car accidents. Which seems to be untrue. A lot of times when you make a, I don't know if there's an underwater base in Lake Ontario. I don't know if there's an underground base underneath Toronto. But when you make a claim that this street has the highest incidence of car crashes in the area, that can be verified. And that's not true. One of the articles I was reading pulled up the accident reports from 2012. And not even in the top 10 most dangerous car accidents. The Gerard Street and Church Street didn't show up. You could say, though, Jason, obviously, if there's a cover-up of an alien base, I'm sure they could also cover up the car accidents. He said, as you're driving along those roads, what causes the accidents are the electronics failing in the vehicles. So it's disrupting the electrical systems of the vehicles. But when you make a claim like that, that can be verified. And apparently that part's not true. What is interesting, Toronto does have an underground city. And you can buy a map of it. Underneath Toronto, they have 30 kilometers of walkways and shops, restaurants, everything. It's basically a city. It's called The Path. And it's not full of zombies. It's not full of aliens. But there actually is a, it was created so you could walk from basically one side of the city to the other without ever getting any vitamin D. And they have, you can go down there and you can shop. You can do everything you need down there and then you pop up. I mean, it sounds cool. Outside of a wide scale nuclear attack, I don't know what the point of it would be other than maybe have a mole man fetish. I don't know. But, yeah, so they do have an underground city that was built by humans. That's underneath the city of Toronto. It's a fascinating story, you know, because, you know, obviously Ernest is not saying anything about aliens. He's not saying anything about any underground alien civilization. And this is what he means, right? Like, if he had had his information out there, you look at this, the Betts family, who uncovered the Betts sphere. We did an episode, I think we did two. They found this weird object, I think that was in Florida. They found this weird object and they couldn't tell what it was, and they ended up trying to get it judged or rated by like this UFO committee. And then they mysteriously disappeared and nobody knew what happened to them. Well, we were doing research for the show, Dead Rabbit Radio, found out that they just moved away and they just stopped answering the phone and stopped reading the letters. I didn't personally find that. I found a website that interviewed them decades after the whole sphere, decades after this whole story came out. Some guy was going to college with some, like his roommate or a classmate of his was like, oh yeah, my family was the one who found that. And he was like, what? And so he went, it's this little blog that people were not finding all the times they talk about the Betts sphere. But because they just got tired of all the phone calls. They got tired of people calling them up at 1 a.m. saying, I know what it is. It's part of a time machine that I'm going to invent 5 years from now. So Ernest wasn't saying none of that stuff. And then it got completely tied into this idea that underground alien base. But that doesn't even really help us describe what this is. Did the aliens make it? Was this an alien? Was this a huge... I lean more... I mean, we really don't have much information on the story. I would lean more towards urban cryptid, which is something that is never talked about. We always talk about wilderness cryptids. But I do believe that there are cryptids in our suburbs, in our inner cities. Because it would only make sense. As we continue to spread out, animals either have to start hunting in our living spaces, in our territory, or they... get pushed farther out, or they have no food source and they die. Yeah, I wonder if this is that, if this is actually a inner city cryptid, an urban cryptid. And I wonder what caused that big chunk to kind of block it off. This monster was obviously smart enough that it could talk and it could make sense of things. It wasn't going spaghettios, and then runs away. You'd be like, what? What does that mean? Obviously, it's saying get out, so it understands that. On the one hand, when I was typing this up, the notes, I thought, why the creature may have caused the collapse. Because they didn't want anyone else coming through. And then I thought about it, and I go, if it was anybody, Ernest. Ernest smashed that entrance up. Because here's the thing, you could go into the tunnel, you figure something could easily come out of it. Oh, and then, yeah, he... When the reporter was out there and they were, like, taking photos, apparently they found cat skeletons. Like, bones of cats near that area. So that was kind of implied that it had eaten Gus and it was eating cats and kittens. as a food source. Because, man, there's a lot of cats, right? I personally am a cat lover. I love cats more than dogs. There's a lot of cats. And if you wanted to eat something, you grab a cat. If I was a sewer-dwelling monster, you could only eat so many frogs. You could only eat so many toads that happen to, like, ribbit into your sewer. And you're, like, tearing their bellies off with your teeth. Ah, gobbling them up. Every so often, you get a hankering for a little cat. You crawl out your hole, and you go eat somebody's cat. I don't know what this is. That's what I would think it was, a cryptid. We could go extra creepy and think that it used to be a human, and the aliens turned it into this thing. Because I hate those stories. Those stories always terrify me. Who knows, though? It's a really weird story. Is there really a hidden city underneath Toronto? Well, there is, but it's not hidden. But underneath that, is there an alien base? And even if that part's not true, does that mean that there is, right now, some sewer-dwelling monster still stalking the gutters of Toronto? Eating cats. It's funny because you think, okay, this, if that was true, this sewer-dwelling creature, if it's a cryptid, if it's a biological animal, is 50 years older at this point. So do they have a natural lifespan as well? Is it like sitting in the sewer and it's like, oh, my knees hurt. Oh, has a little walker. Little walker made out of cat bones. Would they also age like us when it gets to the point where it just eventually just dies in the darkness? Nobody even believes it exists except for Ernest and a few of his most ardent followers. But there was a creature at one time that lived in the sewer and eventually it died a natural death, like we all do. And then it just slowly decomposed in the sewer and then there's no proof of it ever. Or was it a one-off creature, or did he just happen to catch a glimpse of one of a species, one of a race of sewer-dwelling humanoids, the true chud of the world? But I guess we'll never know. Well, here's the thing. I won't ever know. I mean, if you guys live in Cabbage Town, if you guys are in Toronto, if it's drivable for you, I would recommend you driving around Toronto looking for the entrance to this cave. There probably is more than one. I just imagine some of you guys popping off manhole covers and you're like jumping in the sewer, causing all of these car accidents. You're like, yep, now this is the most dangerous intersection in Toronto because you went for causing all these accidents. And now you're in the sewer looking for this creature. Maybe, right? Go do it. If you're not doing anything else this weekend, that's at least something to do. Crawl around and crawl. Like Jason, there's a huge thing between I'm bored and crawling waist deep in human sewage. You're right. But just imagine that being surrounded by feces, being waist deep in the pitch darkness, nothing but the smell of other people's feces, which is the worst, right? Yours is never that bad. You could be on a path to prove the existence of the Cabbage Town monster. That could be your legacy. That could be something that for the rest of your life, people will smell you. You're like, yep, it's really bad. It's really bad. I probably should have worn some protection. Nope, I just had Levi's on. Levi's and a work shirt on. And it soaked into every pore of my skin. You have visible stink lines coming off you. Yes, that might happen, but you'll also be the person who proves that the Cabbage Town monster exists. Isn't that worth it? For you? Not me, I'm not doing it, but for you. I think that is a noble goal. So if you live in the area, try to find out. I'm sure locals know a little bit more. Try to find out where this is. Try to get into that cave. And the next time the Cabbage Monster tells you to get out, you say, dude, I'm just here, man. I just want to give you a hug. I want to take you to the outside world. Have you ever seen the sun? Let's, me and you together, brother. Let's blow this popsicle stand. Let's go eat a couple cats together at the park. And I'll show you a brand new world. Who knows? You thought you were just going to go in there and prove cryptids exist. Instead, you found a friend for life. a friend called the Cabbage Town Monster. You're like, can I give you a new name? He's like, no, I like that one. I'm a Cabbage Town Monster. Like, can I call you CM for short? Nope. Can I call you Cabby? Nope. You gotta call me the Cabbage Town Monster. Also, now I need a job and a place to live. Can I crash on your couch forever? DeadRabRadio@gmail.com is going to be our email address. You can also hit us up at facebook.com/DeadRabRadio. TikTok is @DeadRabRadio. Dead Rabbit Radio is the daily paranormal conspiracy and true crime podcast. You don't have to listen to it every day. I'm so glad you listened to it today. Have a great one, guys.
You love podcasts, the stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcast-free today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcast-free.